Hello and welcome to episode 11 of the Pure Tokyoscope podcast. I am Patrick Macias, the author of Tokyoscope.
And I am Matt Ault, the author of Pure Invention, How Japan Made the Modern World. And how is the modern world today, Patrick?
It's like Act 3 of End of Days starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, only dubbed in Japanese. Do you think the world's really going to end in the year 1999, like Ben Goto said in the last days of Planet Earth?
I'm still waiting. I hoarded all of my gold Krugerrands and stuff in Tupperware tubs in anticipation of the 42K massacre / apocalypse.
So we have, you know, COVID, we've got the yen in the toilet, and also now Sakurajima volcano in Kagoshima Prefecture, southwestern Japan, erupted on Sunday evening, spewing ash and stones and triggering an evacuation order.
Now, it does sound pretty biblical, doesn't it? But actually, Sakurajima down in Kagoshima, it's an active volcano, and it's almost always smoking. I don't know that it's usually hurling out like rock bombs and stuff, but it's sort of a natural feature of that part of Japan. And it's pretty wild. I mean, if you've ever been down to that city, there's like a big smoking volcano in the background. I'm assuming it's like, you know, what the citizens of Pompeii or whatever used to look at and see before their untimely demise. But it doesn't seem like this is a major incident. Like, nobody's evacuating or anything like that. Nobody's freaking out. It's just a kind of interesting geological phenomenon that's happening next to a major city at the moment.
Here on the Ring of Fire, I guess this is just par for the course, earthquakes, volcanoes. But the government did issue 5 warnings to people regarding the Sakurajima volcano and what to do in case a volcano starts erupting. So here we go. This is like David Letterman style.
Is this the countdown? The countdown. Okay, right.
Top 5 things to do in Japan when a volcano starts erupting. Number 1, be aware of volcanic activity.
Okay, that's a good one. Yes.
That means stop playing the Nintendo Switch, even though Kirby just came out or whatever.
Is this like directed at people who ignore the volcano because they don't want to encourage it? Is that what's going on here?
Number 2, do not approach the crater. But what if I got a drone? Think of all the clicks I could get on YouTube if we could just get a drone out over it.
That's just what I want to do when I see a volcano. I'm like, hey, let's check out this like bubbling hellish cauldron. That sounds like a great idea.
Number 3, do not approach the volcano. So if you went past the crater, you know, there's probably like the next thing you're going to do is like get as close as you can, right? But don't do
it. Well, volcanoes aren't small. Do you know what I mean? It's not like it's like, oh, there's a volcano. I mean, it's a giant geological feature kind of in your neighborhood if you happen to live near it. So I don't know. Maybe it's kind of tough to avoid it if it decides to be angry that day.
Number 4, drop the ring of power into the volcano. Don't delay. Don't put it on your finger. Don't turn invisible. Number four is the elderly must evacuate. Are we elderly yet? It sure feels that way sometimes.
I watched anime in the 1970s. I think that counts as having an AARP card in Japan.
And the number one thing to do in Japan if a volcano becomes active, evacuate.
Are they referring to you or your bowels? Like what? What specifically? Actually, on a serious note, I have been in a situation where Hiroko and I were hiking on Mount Aso down in Kyushu, and a warning went off, and we had to very quickly get down off the mountain lest we get wrapped up in something. It didn't actually erupt, but there was a lot of like spewing of, I guess it was like a gas trigger, like of like sulfuric gases and things like that. And as much as we love joking about gas on this podcast, it's actually a really big problem because you will be overwhelmed and die. Fortunately, there were no injuries or anything at that time, but it was kind of a wake-up call to me that, you know, I grew up in Maryland, right? We don't have like giant bubbling, you know, volcanic, you know, active volcanic situations there, period. You know, maybe if you're living in the Pacific Northwest or something, this is more of a kind of thing that you feel in your bones, so to speak. But I sure didn't. And that was a big wake up, like, wow, this is no joke. This is no, you know, Lord of the Rings thing. This is no like dropping Godzilla into Mount Mihara at the end of Godzilla 85. This is a real deal. So it was scary. And I hope that Sakurajima stays quiet for the people who live around there.
Yeah, I think in the meantime, it's important to keep the gods happy with lots of sumo wrestling. And what else can we do?
Constant Shinto rituals. Actually, I don't think it's no coincidence that so much of Shinto is centered around terrain. You know, like, you know, Mount Fuji is like it's more than just a mountain. It's sort of like a holy presence in Japanese mythology and spirituality. There's definitely, I remember actually, you know, Mount Mihara, which is on Izu Oshima. We mentioned it because Godzilla was dropped into it. That's a real volcano. It's really active. It hasn't been for a while, but it did erupt early 1990s. And there's footage, there's this wild, wild footage of a Shinto shrine like halfway up the slope, and the priest did not evacuate it. And there's like footage of him, you can see from a distance, with like this magma like spewing up in the background with him kind of conducting to his rituals and stuff. And he did make it out, but it's check it out, Mount Mihara eruption. I'm sure that footage is available on like YouTube and stuff, just like everything is these days.
Godzilla has fallen into the crater of Mount Mihara. The lava discharged by the eruption has dragged the creature into the mouth of the volcano. Emergency precautions issued in the metropolis earlier have been called off, but the Nishi Shinjuku area remains closed. While troops are salvaging the remains of Super X, examination of residual radiation and gathering of radioactive items has been undertaken.
Speaking of living dangerously, just the other day, Japan recorded its first case of monkeypox. Oh no!
Was it brought in by Mechanicong?
It says, the health minister says a Tokyo resident in his 30s with a recent history of overseas travel tested positive on Monday. The man visited a healthcare facility earlier in the day after developing a rash, high fever, headache, and fatigue. And he's been hospitalized. He's in stable condition. The ministry did not disclose his nationality. But otherwise, yeah, monkeypox is here. Don't come and get it, is my advice.
I don't know that this is as much of a concern to Japanese people in particular as COVID is, but it is concerning, I think.
Yeah, I think they're going to have a meeting to determine if they should have another meeting, to have a meeting about maybe having another meeting.
It'll be like Shin Gojira. Like, there's going to be as the monster is attacking the building outside, we're going to have a meeting about what to do about this.
No, first you have to put on your blue vest to show that you're in like a state of emergency.
Japan, unlike America, actually has live real monkeys walking around. So I think they're probably the ones who should be the most upset and worried about this.
And the monkeys are pissed off out there too. Just this weekend, wild monkeys attack 8 people in Yamaguchi Prefecture.
There is this amazing video from the Japanese news of like this woman, this like housewife, and she can't go out the door of her house. There's a monkey sitting there like peering in through the window like some kind of little street urchin. It's in areas that have monkeys, and there are quite a few of them, they've been a problem for a long time. They're like, imagine basically evil toddlers that are extremely agile and able to kind of form simple plans and do things like, you know, steal food from inside your house and things like that. And purses, I know they've stolen purses from people before and things like that. I don't know what they're doing with the contents of them.
Isn't this the plot of Ghoulies?
It's like literal yokai running around in the mountains and streets. When Hiroko and I went, we actually went to film snow monkeys in the hot springs for National Geographic years back. And I remember on the kind of main drag of town there, one of the proprietors of the kind of souvenir shop said they had had situations where like a group of monkeys would make a commotion outside. And then while the proprietors were dealing with it, other monkeys would sneak in the back and steal like cookies and food and stuff. So this isn't like your usual infestation of like rats or roaches or something. These are actual thinking. They're basically small humans, and they're just as evil and twisted as we are, and hungry for cookies. So it's a situation, Patrick.
Everything is connected, Matt. But we'll see what happens next, because with all this monkey trouble in Japan, like with real monkeys and monkeypox, I think the anxiety out there is that Japan will further tighten an already pretty tight border and not let anybody in. But we'll see what happens.
I actually wonder if the seventh wave, as they're calling it, of coronavirus cases, and it's really bad here in Japan now. They were clocking like something like 30,000 infected a day in Tokyo last week. I haven't checked it super recently, but I think it's still up there. And I've been hearing some rumblings from people that actually maybe this is kind of a good thing that it happened while the borders were closed, because it shows that actually the borders aren't really what's key to sparking these waves. It's just going to be something we have to live with. And now that won't be able to be used as a reason to keep the borders closed to tourists much longer. But that kind of leads us into our next topic, which is, this is just me. I've noticed a huge uptick in the number of tourists outside. When you're downtown, you see people, aloha shirt, camera, sunglasses. I'm exaggerating, but a little. People who are obviously visiting here, and I'm like, how the heck do these people get in? And there's been some other rumblings I've heard that perhaps the work visa system, which was instituted a few months back to allow people who have like a legitimate business purpose to come and visit Japan to come in, is being a little bit abused by people whose quote unquote work includes a lot of sightseeing. So I don't know. Have you been out? Have you noticed a lot of this? I've definitely noticed more people out in the streets who seem to not be local.
I haven't been out much. I've just been locked up. But yeah, I mean, a few people, bless their hearts, have asked me, hey, Patrick, can you help me get one of those work visas so I can come to Akihabara and go to Nakano Broadway? And I mean, believe me, if I didn't live here, I would definitely be reaching for that card as well. You know, maybe to you, Matt. Matt, can you sponsor me for a work visa?
Yeah, anybody who comes into work on an Alt Japan work visa is going to be put to work. There's no time for crime when you're on the Alt Japan work visa. You're going to be just pushing moji. You're going to be translating or cleaning up our translations.
You're going to be hunting monkeys in the mountains with a tranquilizer gun.
Exactly. I mean, sometimes you never know. Localization is, it's a pretty broad field. Sometimes you need to localize those monkeys.
So we'll see what happens. It's a dangerous, crazy world out there. Stay safe. Stay informed. Don't approach the volcano.
Don't approach the monkeys. Don't look them in the eye. Don't show teeth. That's actually a thing. You should never smile at monkeys.
I never smile anyway, so that's not a problem.
Exactly. See, you're already one step ahead of the curve.
Shogun continues, starring Richard Chamberlain, Toshiro Mifune, and Yoko Shimada.
Last minute addition to the news here. Golden Globe Award winning Japanese actress Yoko Shimada dies at 69. She played the Lady Marco in James Clavell's Shogun, an epic television event in the 1980s that changed our lives, I think, in some ways, maybe.
Shogun was a major moment in like US-Japan kind of pop cultural relations, I think. I mean, that was a really big deal.
She took home the Golden Globe for Best Actress in Television Drama for her part as the Lady Marco. And it's I'm sure at some point we're just going to break down and have to do a whole rewatch episode on Shogun. But in the meantime, we're going to pour one out on the curb for Yoko Shimada, great Japanese actress.
And that's prestige TV, like before prestige TV, was it not?
Yeah, they even got Orson Welles to narrate the trailer, just like with Revenge of the Nerds.
Star Wars, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, The Sound of Music. In the tradition of these great films about fighting back against the odds, 20th Century Fox presents another milestone in motion picture history. Revenge of the Nerds.
Nerds!
Nerds.
Nerds.
Nerds!
What is a nerd?
They've been laughed at. Picked on.
There's a roommate, pal!
And put down.
I'm not kissing a nerd.
They don't have the moves. Or the muscle.
You know karate?
No.
Good.
But they've got the brains.
I know what we're gonna do.
It's time for the odd to get even.
Their action tonight demands an immediate retaliation.
How many cameras do we have left?
This should do it.
Oh, here she comes.
Go up, go up.
Oh, no! Oh!
Nerds as good as you?
Revenge of the Nerds. Their time has come.
I drink to that.
I thought you were going to say Transformers the movie.
James Clavell's Shogun. And with that, we will cut to a commercial and go to our feature segment.
Police in Tokyo say at least 7 people are dead and 10 are injured following a stabbing rampage in a popular electronics district. Police say a man ran a truck into a crowd of shoppers. They say he jumped out of the rented truck, began stabbing people that he'd knocked down, then turned his attention to the horrified bystanders. 17 people were stabbed in just 3 minutes. One witness says he saw the man and thought he was just pushing people as he ran. Witnesses say he screamed as he attacked people. Police arrested 25-year-old Tomohiro Kato, who had blood on his face. A witness says he dropped the knife when police pointed a gun at him. Officials say Kato told police that he was tired of life and sick of everything. They say he told investigators that he intended to kill people. The attack happened at lunchtime in a crowded district where electronics and games are sold. It also fell on the 7th anniversary of another mass stabbing. At least 17 ambulances rushed to the scene to tend to the victims. Once rare, stabbing attacks have become more frequent in Japan in recent years as violent crime has increased. Matt Friedman, The Associated Press.
We're recording the new episode a little early this week on July 26, as this news is breaking here as of today. According to Reuters, the Japanese government carried out the death sentence of a man who went on a stabbing rampage in 2008. The man, Tomohiro Kato, ran a truck into a busy Tokyo shopping district before going on a stabbing rampage, killing 7 people and injuring 10. So yeah, this morning they executed the Akihabara killer, Tomohiro Kato, 14 years, almost to the day after he committed the crime.
Yeah, it was June 8th, 2008. It was a Sunday, and I think we all remember this because Sundays were the day that they shut down Akihabara's Chuodori to traffic and like kind of made it what's called a pedestrian heaven in Japanese. And it isn't clear why Kato targeted that area. You know, it was certainly a crowded area. He doesn't seem to have been an otaku or any leanings toward that, although there was initially some attempts in the media to paint him that way. But it was a big moment. I was here, and I remember when that happened, and a lot of people were saying that it was sort of a Manson moment, as it were, for otaku culture, that it was like a kind of watershed moment. I don't think it actually played out that way, but it was certainly, you know, how to put this? I think it presaged a lot of really nasty stuff that would start happening all over the world later in a lot of ways. And we can get into that, but it was definitely a major moment here in Japan.
I was here in Tokyo at the time as well. And, you know, weekends in Akihabara, that was kind of, I could have been there easily at that time in that place, because Akihabara was like really popping around that time. It was post Train Man. I think some of the, there were like a lot of things happening on the Hokuten. There were a lot of people out there with their Itaisha.
The idols were a really big thing. The maids were a really big thing.
Yeah. So the fact that it had happened in Akihabara just kind of, it did put otaku culture under a microscope, as people were kind of like looking for connections and motives between the murder and, was this guy an anime fan? Was he like a crazy gamer? And that didn't turn out to be the case, or at least not. It never became part of the public record, so to speak. But it did impact Akihabara culture in the way that they closed down the Hokuten. They closed down the pedestrian heaven.
They closed it down, and I think it was closed down for several years until about, 2011 or so. They finally did reopen it again. And like, Akihabara had been the site of a lot of kind of weird headlines in both the lead up and after that. Like, there was they're called chika idols, like underground idols would be performing on the streets during the on those Sundays, and had gotten like really, really aggressive in their performances, to the point where some were almost doing strip teases, and locals, like the local like shop proprietors, obviously not otaku shop proprietors, were complaining about that, and cops were cracking down. And there was also like this whole thing about otaku gari. Have you heard about this? Where people were actually like robbing otaku. They would actually jump them and like take their money from them.
Steal their lunch money,
basically, because quote unquote they looked weak. And a bunch of people had been kind of arrested for that around that time frame.
Also, there were like things like flash mobs. There was this kind of like internet culture was like leaking into real life. There was something called like the Otaku Liberation Army that would go around protesting on the weekends. I'm not sure what they were protesting for. Maybe the lack of an Anna Miller's in the neighborhood or something like that. But there was that crossover between like just internet culture and otaku culture was really strong, and like it was happening there in the streets like every weekend. More so than it is now, I think.
Definitely, definitely. It's actually been tamped down now. But it's interesting because that really presaged what would be happening all over the planet, I think, in the decade to come. Because now, like, the barrier between the internet and real life has just really broken down in a lot of places, in America in particular. And, like, you see things like otaku bulletin boards, like image boards that otaku basically founded at the turn of the 20th century, are now, like, feeding directly into not only society, but, like, politics in the United States, right? Like, you know, QAnon came from 4chan, and 4chan is a homage to Futaba Channel and, like, 2channel and all sorts of things that were made in Japan. The Akihabara massacre was, in a lot of ways, a really creepy sort of progenitor to the kind of mass violence instance that we'd be having in the States, and we're still seeing now. Like, the guy posted on a bulletin board that he's going to be doing it. When it was happening, like, he drove his car into a crowd of people and then came out and started stabbing them with a knife. And a bunch of people on the ground there started live streaming it onto a now defunct Japanese live streaming service. And that sparked this huge kind of, you know, debate in Japanese society about the propriety of doing things like that. Now, of course, unfortunately, that sort of live streaming of violence is all too common on the web, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the first kind of real example of that, you know?
The perpetrator, Kato, was a temp worker working at an auto factory, and it sounded like he was about to lose his job. He was having problems with his family. He was going into debt. He posted on this message board, "I will kill people in Akihabara. If only I had a girlfriend, I wouldn't have quit work. I would never have become addicted to my mobile phone. Anybody with hope couldn't possibly understand how I feel. I don't have a single friend, and I won't in the future. I'll be ignored because I'm ugly. I'm lower than trash because at least the trash gets recycled."
So this is some brutal stuff, man. But if you listen to what you just said, it's really interesting, because I remember at the time there was an attempt to paint him as an otaku or a hikikomori, neither of which is true. But what he is now, we know, because we have a word for this, he's basically an incel, right? And this is an early example of somebody who is really presenting in that way, going out and causing a really horrific incident. And, you know, the stories that came out about his life at the time, I know, like, he had been like a really good student when he was young, but then like he kind of collapsed under the pressure that he was getting from his parents and things like that. It's just sounds like there was some abuse going on in the house where he was like forced to stand outside and things like that, or even eat off the floor if he didn't, you know, score well on a test or something like that. So it's a really just a messed up sort of thing all around.
Yeah, Kato was actually born in 1982, the year that we talked about on the last episode. And like our producer Jay kind of showed up a little earlier and said, you know, 1982, people born that year, they grew up experiencing like the decline. You know, they grew up with kind of lowered expectations. They were the first people to really experience post-bubble Japan growing up.
Yes, and, sure.
And Kato kind of, you know, whether it was mental health, I mean, it kind of exposed a lot of cracks in Japanese society, like isolation, poverty.
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head, because Kato, you know, or anybody who was born in 82, basically came of age in the middle of the lost decades. You know, he would have turned 18 in 2000. The lost decades began with the popping of the economic bubble in 1990 and lasted until about 2010. So you're right. There was never really any sense of Japan as this ascendant, let alone transcendent sort of empire, economic empire that it was in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And people were, young people in particular, having a really hard time launching careers and things like that. It's when words like hikikomori first kind of entered the lexicon. It's certainly when otaku, even though that was coined in the 80s, I think really started to enter the lexicon, because in 1989, there was this really nasty case involving a serial killer named Tsutomu Miyazaki, who was unfairly painted as an otaku murderer. And even though he wasn't, that kind of association between kind of murder and darkness and otaku really stuck. And I'm not sure if you remember this or not, but the week after the Akihabara massacre, the Japanese government put Tsutomu Miyazaki to death. They actually carried out his death sentence that had been handed down in the 90s. And a lot of people at the time saw that as a sort of the government kind of silently firing a shot across the bow of otaku and fan culture. I think that was a little overblown. I don't know whether it was on purpose or coincidence, but it certainly was kind of shocking that right after Kato's incident, Tsutomu Miyazaki, who is indelibly, you know, linked with the kind of dark and bad side of otakuism, as at least as seen by the you know, authority figures in Japan, was put to death.
Yeah, so the perpetrator of the Akihabara murders, Kato, his death sentence was finalized in 2015. So he's been on death row for 7 years. And the thing about Japanese death sentences is they don't tell you when they're going to execute you. They just, right. You just wake up one morning and they just come and say, okay, now's the time. And they lead you into the room. And I guess it's usually death by hanging, right?
Yes. I think it's exclusively death by hanging here. Yeah. It's just how it goes here. And this is dark stuff. And this is, you know, I have to admit, with all that's been going on in recent years, I had almost totally forgotten about this incident. And it was only when, you know, the news came up of Kato being executed that I started to all kind of flood back. And the similarities between it and things we've seen in recent years all over the world, you know, whether people are using cars to ram people, whether people are, you know, they just want to kill because they feel like they're completely, you know, isolated and dropped out of society. you know, we're seeing this sort of thing again and again. And I don't think it's any coincidence that one of the early, really kind of high profile examples of this not only happened in Japan, but happened kind of in Japan's like otaku district, the kind of heart of otaku culture. Not because it was an otaku who did this or because otaku were responsible, but because like otaku culture is sort of one of the real ways in which Japan got to the future a little ahead of the rest of the world, like in kind of consumption as identity and like fantasy as identity and things like that. And, you know, that people who had sort of forged new lives for themselves in using those new tools were being targeted by this guy. I don't know. I don't think it's a coincidence at all. And it's a really sad thing. I really feel terrible for everybody involved. And, it's just, I don't know, this literally, the news only came in like about an hour before we started recording, and it's all been kind of flooding back to me.
Well, I mean, the thing to note is that the authorities did not clamp down on otaku culture. If anything, it kind of grew and spread globally in spite of this tragic event.
Definitely. I mean, you know, if you want to look at it, I remember distinctly Shintaro Ishihara, the then mayor of Japan, said that he wasn't planning on taking any kind of measures to, you know, increase the police presence, that everybody saw this as a sort of, you know, one-off freak event, and that there would be no kind of crackdown or anything like that. And, you know, when you look at it, sort of cool Japan, to use a trite phrase, really exploded after that. You know, the Japanese government itself launched the Cool Japan Fund in 2013, which is 5 years after that. And now, you know, you can kind of make the argument that we're all otaku now. So it's, I know it sounds cheesy, but it's true. I mean, you know, we're all consuming content. We're all kind of in our little personal fantasy spheres and things like that. We're listening to this podcast. So it was just it was a dark day, and it turned out to only be a day. And that's a good thing, I think.
Meanwhile, Akihabara keeps limping along. A lot of stores have been closing there lately. Last week, there was actually another fatal stabbing. There was a Yakuza style killing in Akihabara last week.
So talk about, so as we've moved from otaku to like straight up like gang violence, that's so weird to think of violence of any kind happening in Akihabara. But you know, it's a major central neighborhood of Tokyo. So I guess it's, you know, it's not that out of the question that things like that are going to be happening there. But you know, you're right. It's kind of been a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Moribund, sleepy. It definitely doesn't feel like it has the vibrancy that it had when I first moved here in 2003, like that 2003 to 2008 timeframe. Like it really felt like something was going on there. And now, I mean, it's still there. It's still doing okay, but it doesn't feel like nearly as much of a mover of culture as it was. What do you think?
I think things go in cycles, and it's definitely on the down right now, possibly because of the pandemic, possibly because of the complete lack of tourists, or maybe there were too many tourists for a while, who can say? But we'll see what happens next. I remain weirdly optimistic for what the future has in store for Akihabara.
I want to be optimistic. Every time I go there, you know, there's these maids, these really forlorn maids on the street, like handing out flyers to like tourists who don't exist, you know, desperately trying to get people into their little, you know, establishments, their little maid cafes.
Yeah, the last time I had a friend come into town and we went to Akihabara and we just said, hey, what the heck? Let's just take one of these girls up on one of their maid cafes and just follow them and see what happens. And they took us to a place. It was tiny. We had like an awkward conversation for like 20 minutes and we left. And, you know, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? You know, but I mean, I guess people are into that.
I thought you were going to say, and then we checked our wallets and they were gone.
Otaku Gari was written on the back of my jacket and lipstick.
Really, Patrick, isn't going to a maid cafe and coming out a little disappointed just a metaphor for life?
Welcome back. A chain of cafes in Japan is designed to make even the nerdiest customers feel like royalty. Experts say the trend of so-called maid cafes came out of Japan's subculture of people who like comic books, video games, and cartoons that feature fantasy characters. As you can see, young waitresses are dressed in frilly maid costumes while they bow. They call customers lord or master. Sometimes they get down on their knees to stir cream and sugar into diners' coffee. For $75, customers can chat with the waitresses in a private room cluttered with comic books, figurines, and DVDs. The maid cafes also cater to couples, we're told, tourists, and just the curious.
Well, that about wraps it up for episode 11 of the Pure Tokyo Scope podcast. I'd like to personally thank each and every one of you out there for listening to and supporting our show. So continue to spread the word, and we'll be back next week with a new episode.
Yes, we will. Catch you next time.
Some scenes from tomorrow night's Shogun.
Suicide. Lord Buntaro, he's my husband.
The Saga of Shogun continues at 9, 8 Central and Mountain.